All right, welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. I'm glad everybody made it safely in today. Let me introduce the judges for any of you who have not been here before. I'm Judge Livingston, and to my right is Justice Lee Gabriel. And to my left is our visiting judge, Justice Charles Blyle. He will be with us this morning and this afternoon. We have another docket this afternoon, but this morning we only have one case on our docket. The case on our docket this morning is Mangum versus State of Texas, cause number 21563-CR, and it looks like the lawyers have checked in, and they've asked for their full time for presentation. Mr. Barber. You may proceed.
May it please the court. This is, in my opinion, a fairly simple appeal. I don't think it's real complicated. The issues are twofold. First of all, whether the state's expert should have been allowed to give his opinion on replacement cost. And secondly, even if he was allowed to, was the evidence legally sufficient? Because fair market value, I believe, could have been ascertained. There was no evidence in the record that it couldn't be ascertained. And even if it couldn't have been, the expert testified about replacement costs, not at the time or around the time of the theft, but 20 months later. And so with that, I go just briefly into the facts. The state had four witnesses. The first witness was the owner. He did not testify as to the value of the ring at all. They offered a law enforcement official who found the ring that was alleged to have been stolen by the appellant from the owner, and it was found at a pawn shop. He found it through eyelids 3 days after it was stolen, and he did not testify as to value. The assistant manager at the pawn shop owner testified that he did value this ring 3 days after the theft, because he's in the business of selling used jewelry, and he did ascertain what he believed was the value of it, but he did not bring any of those figures to trial when he was brought to trial by the state. So that left the state's expert, Kenneth Bond. Mr. Bond was not in the business of selling used jewelry. He owned a retail store in a local mall in our community. He testified, well, step back for just a second. I asked for a hearing outside the presence of the jury to test his qualifications and his opinions, the basis for his opinions. And we had a hearing outside the jury on his qualifications and his opinions. And we restarted the trial. And at the point where the trial counsel for the state asked about his opinion, I objected on two bases. One was that he was not qualified to testify about the value of used jewelry because he was not in that business. And secondly, that he was testifying as to replacement cost, which was not the proper value because value is to be made according to fair market value. The judge overruled my objections. I asked for a running objection. He then testified that the replacement cost.
When did you ask for a running objection?
Was
that after evidence of the value of the diamonds?
No, I made my objection. He overruled it. Then I asked if I could have a running objection right then, and he said I could have a running objection. Then the expert went on to give his opinions.
You're not talking about the hearing outside the jury?
No. At the hearing outside the jury, we finished the hearing, and the judge didn't ask for any argument. He simply said, bring the jury back in. So when the trial counsel for the state asked the question about his opinion as to the value, I objected based on two bases. Number one, that he was not qualified to give his testimony because he was not in the business of used jewelry. And number two, that he was using replacement cost. We had ascertained that from the hearing outside the jury, which the judge, of course, was present for. He overruled my objection at that time. This was before he gave any testimony as to value, the expert. And then when he overruled my objection, I said, can I have a running objection on the grounds of my objections, and he said I could.
But that was outside the presence of the jury, was it not?
No, that was inside. That was during the, when the jury was there.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. And so we went on, and he, anyway, so he went on and testified that the value was within the value range over $1,500 and less than $20,000.
Wasn't the expert's testimony actually that fair market value and replacement value in this instance were one and the same?
That's not how I read the testimony, Your Honor. The what he said was it would be the replacement cost for new gold and new diamonds. And I asked him, do you know what a person who was looking for used jewelry, what a willing buyer and a willing seller would pay for that? He said no.
Didn't the pawn shop owner say that he would, he made a determination as to what the value of the ring was when he purchased it, and he used the same method of valuation that the expert testified he used?
He didn't. I don't know that he said he used replacement cost.
No, he said that he took the weight of the gold and determined how much that was worth. He took the size of the diamonds and determined how much those were worth, and thereby came to a conclusion as to what the value of the ring was, which was the same method that Mr. Bond used, wasn't it?
Well, I know I asked him for fair market value. I know that.
And that was his method of determining fair market value, was it not?
Yeah, I would object. I would suggest that if that was his method, that's not the correct method. I can have a house right now, and I do have a house that was built in 1961. The replacement cost is going to be much greater than the fair market value of that house right now. So I don't think that if he did use that method, that that is fair market value. I don't think a 55-year-old ring has a fair market value to what it would be to replace it today in 2015.
But your objections was to qualifications and relevance, because you said that it was replacement cost, not to the reliability of the method by which he determined what he believed the value of the ring to be. Isn't that correct?
I did object that he was using the wrong value, that he was using replacement cost as opposed to fair market value.
But he said multiple times that, in his opinion, fair market value and replacement costs were one and the same. Did he not? Both outside the presence of the jury and in front of the jury.
Well, I believe he was confused on what fair market value meant. It was never defined to him by the state as to what fair market value is. Typically, in a case like this, you give, or I have seen it, that the expert is given the definition of fair market value, and then he gives an opinion what that fair market value is. I think he was confused about what the difference was between fair market value and replacement cost.
But if we're judging the sufficiency of the evidence, we're looking at the evidence that was both proper and improper to see if there's sufficient evidence. So given the fact that he said fair market value was the same value as replacement value, we have to consider that in judging the sufficiency of the evidence, do we not?
Well, again, I don't believe he, my reading of the record was he was clear he was valuing it based on replacement cost, that is the cost of the gold today, 20 months after it was stolen, and the cost of the diamonds. I don't know in any way that that could be fair market value unless we make a legal.
But wasn't that for the jury to decide? Isn't that a credibility? Weighing the testimony and giving it the weight, you're asking us to assume that he was confused. I've read the testimony. He says what he says, and that was for the jury to decide whether that he seemed confused or not, wasn't it?
Well, I would say that the evidence is clear to me that he was using replacement cost and he didn't understand the concepts, because we asked him over and over. I even suggested in an objection to the judge outside the presence of the jury that he was confusing replacement costs with fair market value, and the judge sustained my objection that he was intermingling the two. And so I think it was, at least I believe the record's clear, that he was using replacement costs, not fair market value. But even if he's using, even if you're going to judge fair market value and replacement cost, even if you make that argument, Judge, that that's correct, he valued it 20 months after the theft.
But in your brief, all you attack is replacement costs valued 20 months after, not fair market value, which is to be determined at the time that the offense occurred. You don't raise that in your brief at all, anywhere.
Well, if he raised fair market value 20 months later, it's still insufficient because it has to be done at the time. So his testimony, regardless, was 20 months after.
Mr. Barber, I was kind of struck by the testimony of Mr. Bond that he said, I came up with a FMV, and I took that to mean fair market value in context. And there was a dash that was the replacement cost. So he basically, in that one sentence, said he was treating replacement cost and fair market value as the same thing. And if that's so, that's evidence, isn't it?
Well, I guess my argument would be is I don't agree because fair market value is not defined as replacement cost. Fair market value is between a willing buyer and a willing seller. And replacement cost is not between a willing buyer and willing seller. And so I don't think his testimony can be considered fair market value. If we define fair market value as willing buyer and willing seller, he's not doing that.
But if he's testifying that the replacement cost and the fair market value are equivalent or the same,
well, what
that's
I think
evidence, isn't it?
I think what you're going to have to do at that point is say that he can change the law and define replacement cost as fair market value. And I don't think an expert witness can change the law and define replacement cost as fair market value.
No, but an expert can give his opinion. And that was done.
Well, but fair market value was never defined for him as a willing buyer and a willing seller. And so, and he was clear when he was if you want to use the term fair market value, that he was calculating it as replacement cost. Because he clearly said, this is the gold, this is how much it costs, this is the jewelry, this is how much it costs. That's not fair market value. And he didn't even sell used jewelry to be able to tell us what fair market value is.
But he said that he appraised jewelry for insurance purposes, which certainly would be include used jewelry, would it not?
Yes, but I believe it would be replacement cost, not fair market value. I think that the insurance cost,
how do we know that, sir, by the record?
Well, from his discussion, well, I guess here's my argument. If you want to let him redefine fair market value as replacement cost and change the law, then he can do that. But it's clear he's not. I ask him, do you know what a willing buyer would sell it to a willing seller? And he says, no, I'm not in the business of used jewelry. You'd have to ask somebody else. I don't have any idea. And so there's clear evidence in the record that he doesn't know the fair market value. He's equating replacement costs. He doesn't understand the difference between the two. Because there's evidence outside the presence of the jury and within the jury where he says, I don't know what a willing buyer would sell it to a willing seller would sell it to a willing buyer in the fair market. And I don't believe we can let an expert witness redefine what fair market value is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barber. Ms. Ponder.
May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Ponder. I'm an assistant criminal district attorney with Wichita County. Your Honors, before I get into my argument, I would like to discuss the questions that you you went over with Mr. Barber. I wanted to also clarify a few things for the record. First off, on page 23 of the record, it's volume 5, page 23, the question is, question from Mr. Barber. So can you tell me what a person who sells used jewelry would try to sell it for and what the basis for that opinion would be? Answer, I can't tell you that because I'm not in the business of doing that. So I just wanted to clarify that one particular instance. And then later in the record on page 29, Mr. Barber asked the question, you're not telling us what a buyer who's trying to buy a used ring, you're not telling us what the fair market value would be. I'm telling you what the replacement cost would be. Your Honors, my argument is almost exactly as y'all had asked Mr. Barber. The fact that the expert testified as to replacement cost, and he used fair market value and replacement cost as though they were synonymous. There are at least four places in the record where he uses these terms, and he's very clear that to him, replacement cost and fair market value are exactly the same. He specifically even says that on volume 5, page 22, answer, fair market would be if you walked into, in my opinion, it would be if you walked into a jewelry store and wanted to replace that ring or wanted to buy that particular ring. So that's answering that what a willing buyer would pay for in that marketplace question that was raised earlier. Your Honors, to go over the brief facts, the appellant was convicted of theft from an elderly individual between $1,500 and $20,000 from an elderly. The appellant requested and was granted a hearing outside the presence of the jury. At the end of that hearing, there was no objection. In fact, it ends with the court stating on page volume 5, 24 and 25, the court stating, all right, are y'all ready for the jury to come back? Barber, yes, Judge. Bates, yes, Your Honor. In addition, the appellant put on no evidence. There was no abuse of discretion in finding the jewelers qualified, relevant, and reliable. And moving on to the sufficiency argument, we must view things in the light most favorable to the verdict. Y'all had asked, and it had been discussed, whether the replacement value or the fair market value occurred 20 months later. When we're looking at the evidence and at the record in a light most favorable to the verdict, it would be taken into account that this valuation, the fair market value or replacement cost, as I said, he treats them synonymously, would be have obtained at the time of the theft. There's no evidence or anything on the record to suggest that the fair market value that the expert testified to was anything different or occurred later after the occurred at the time of the trial as opposed to determining the fair market value at the time of the theft. Mr. Barber compared jewelry to a house. In this particular instance, I'm arguing that jewelry is something unique. Jewelry is made out of precious metals and diamonds in this particular case. It cannot be boiled down into anything else. Whereas a house can be deconstructed. It has lots of different parts, just like a car. So jewelry is unique in that sense, so it wouldn't be establishing a poor policy to find in the instance of jewelry that the replacement cost and fair market value are the same. By determining the root of the parts, the value of the gold by the weight, and the value of the diamond by examining the size of the diamond, the cut, the clarity, etc., to determine the value of the ring. Your Honors, in addition, I would like to point out that when viewing the light most favorable to the verdict, we should also take into account the $500 in cash that was also stolen at the time. So really, we're arguing about whether the value of a ring that was testified to be over $2,602 was over $1,000. And there's no evidence from the appellant to suggest anything other than the fact that that ring itself alone, without that $500 cash, was worth anything less than the threshold value itself. Then coming back, Your Honors, to the preservation of error argument, at the end of that hearing, there was no objection. Appellant, the whole purpose of that hearing was to establish the expert's qualifications, the basis for his opinions, and what his opinions were going to be. At that time, that was the appropriate time to make an objection to the expert's testimony. According to King versus State, which I have not cited, but I have a record cite for, is 953 Southwest 2nd, 266. It says that the objection should be made at the earliest opportunity. And there are many reasons for this. One of this is for judicial economy. There's no reason to have the jury come in and out, back and forth, to waste the time of both the jurors, the court, et cetera, to place an objection after the hearing that already determined the issues that we were talking about. Secondly, because the whole, if we're looking at the purpose of objections and why we have to be sufficiently specific, et cetera, it's to notify both the court of the basis for the objection, in addition to the opposing attorney, to give that opposing attorney the opportunity to rectify the situation. So by waiting until after the hearing, when the judge had the perfect opportunity to rule or hear what the objection would be, and waiting until after to object, it's too late at that point in time, having to argue whether the expert was qualified or reliable or relevant after that hearing is wasting the time in front of the jury. It's wasting the time of the court, and it's not allowing that opposing counsel the opportunity to rectify the issue outside the presence of the jury. Your Honors, I'm going to move back to the expert testimony again, and I apologize for jumping around. The expert testimony properly utilized the principles in the field. As y'all asked about, Kenneth Vaughn testified as to determine the value of the ring by first weighing the gold, then determining the cut of the diamond, examining the diamond, and then comparing it to a website that he uses for his suppliers to determine that value. This was almost exactly the same way that that Charles Lynn Miller, the Easy Pawn assistant manager, determined the value of the ring at the time that it was pawned. He first weighed the amount of the gold, and then he compared the diamond to his database. Now, the two of them are using different databases to reach the value of the diamond, but they're both using the same technique in order to reach that determination of the value of the ring. Your Honors, in conclusion, the expert witness was qualified to testify. His testimony was reliable, it was relevant. The evidence was legally sufficient to show that the appellant was guilty of theft between $1,500 and $20,000, including the $500 cash, as well as the expert's testimony as to the value of the ring, and that the appellant failed to preserve error because her objection was untimely and unspecific. Unless you'll have any questions, I'll waive my time to the court.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Ponder. Thank you. Mr. Barber, rebuttal?
Yes, Judge, just briefly. I wanted to point out, and I'm going to have to look at my computer to do it, but Section 3108 of the Penal Code tells us how value is to be calculated, and it makes a distinction between the fair market value and replacement cost. It's the fair market value of the property or service at the time and place of the offense, or if fair market cannot be ascertained, the cost of replacing the property. My argument is that those are two different standards with two different definitions, and the expert can't change those because the law is as such. The second argument, even if he can, he did it 20 months later. Replacement cost, if he's saying that's fair market value, if he is saying replacement cost are one and the same, which I don't think he was, but if he was, it was 20 months later. The statute says it has to be done within a reasonable time after the theft. I think we all know that gold and diamonds fluctuate a great deal within even a short period of time. And so I think that evidence would still be legally insufficient because we don't have any kind of value within a short period of time after the theft. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barber. Ms. Ponder, we appreciate you all coming here today. I hope you make it back safely. Your case is now submitted, and we will now adjourn court, as that was our only case on this morning's docket. Thank you.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned. Please be seated.